From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, keeping Texas from going dry. Governor Greg Abbott makes securing the state's water future an emergency item for the legislature.
Water is so important in our state. I am making it an emergency item this session.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. You can call it a water crisis or a water problem. Either way, the state has been dealing with water scarcity for as long as people have roamed the plains, deserts, and escarpment of the region. The state has always dealt with drought cycles, and the 1950 to 1957 drought remains the worst in the state's history, devastating agriculture and causing severe water shortages. That crisis led to the creation of the Texas Water Development Board in 1957, which was tasked with long-term water planning and financing water projects. In response, large-scale reservoir construction began, with over 200 reservoirs built across the state in the following decades. But now, with climate change, longer, hotter summers, lessening rainfall, compounded by the state's rapid population growth, there is even a bigger demand and strain on the limited water resources. And there have been successes with water conservation programs and the expansion of water recycling and reuse projects. Governor Abbott's recent proposals are calling for large-scale desalination plants, expanded water recycling efforts, water infrastructure and pipeline repairs, and new reservoirs and long-term water transfer projects.
We have water sources drying up. There are so many communities across the state of Texas that are suffering from broken or leaking pipes. We've got to fix all that. And so what we're doing this session, we're going to provide the largest investment in Texas history in ensuring that we're going to have plenty of water supply for the next 50 years. And to get that done, our emergency item will ensure we get that law to my desk and sign.
Sarah Schlesinger is the CEO of the Texas Water Foundation, a statewide nonpartisan nonprofit that works in water policy and a statewide water campaign called Texas Runs on Water.
It's been a long time coming for water to be recognized as being a priority item. And that hasn't happened for a long time because water tends to only be in the headlines when you are on the heels of either a significant drought or a significant flood. But the challenges that have been persisting really over the last decade in particular have much more of an invisible quality to them because they happen within aging infrastructure, right? So below the ground, things that are invisible. And there's this growing water supply concern that exists. So as opposed to passing a lot of legislation because we've just had Hurricane Harvey or passing legislation because we've just had a significant drought, in the past few legislative sessions, we've seen this growing trend towards looking proactively at what needs to happen at a statewide scale in order to address that growing water and supply demand curve.
Well, Texas is a growing state. And lots of predictions about how many more people are going to be moving here. And the cliche we hear now all the time is that they come here, but they don't bring water with them. And we also hear about all these corporations that want to relocate here, and they frequently are water intensive. Do you think that Governor Abbott and others have gotten the message that it's now at the point where the Texas water problem is constraining the future growth projections?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that leadership has finally seen that at a statewide scale, the combination of where those population projections are going, or urban growth corridors, coupled with the businesses that are attracted to Texas, that there is insufficient water to ensure that that growth can continue to occur. So we think a lot about where we are in terms of global economic rankings, right? So we're the eighth strongest economy in the world right now. Comptroller, you know, signals that we could rise in those ranks as well, but for the availability and the overall water security forecast of Texas. So I think that that's exactly right. I think that leadership is looking at it both because they're hearing from some prominent businesses concerns about, well, what are your water security forecasts before we relocate, build campuses? And they're starting to see evidence of that as well in places like the Rio Grande Valley, where you're starting to see businesses shut down, where you're starting to see communities issue moratoriums on building because there is insufficient water supply.
But even if we never had another person pack up and move to Texas, another corporation move their headquarters to Texas, if we just looked at where we are right now, we still have a water problem.
We do. Yes, that's absolutely right. You know, water supply is a really funny thing because it's never, I find myself recently thinking a lot about the fact that it's never about a static arrival for a certain volumetric quantity, right? It's always about how much you need at any given time. And it feels like the easiest analogy to use to paint, you know, a better picture for what water security in Texas looks like is to think a little bit about financial security, right? You diversify your portfolio to reduce risk. And more communities in Texas, whether they are urban or rural or anything in between, need to be diversifying their water portfolio in order to reduce for the increasing risk that we're seeing, both because of changing water availability, whether that's groundwater depletion, increased evaporation for longer and hotter summers, aging infrastructure, so on and so forth, right? And so I think that even if a single person didn't move to Texas, additional person moved to Texas, or a single additional business, we're still looking at a pretty significant gap in what it is that we're going to need to be secure. And perhaps more than just that number, because I think it's easy to get hung up on, well, how much do we need to solve for? But where are communities going to be in terms of any given summer or any given, you know, we have a longer spell, how secure are they in being able to respond to the current conditions, which are becoming more variable and higher risk?
So the water problem, we can say Texas has a water problem, but what does it actually mean? Is that a homogenous problem for the state because the state is so big and has such a variety of needs? I can open my tap and I can take a shower and I'm going to have water. I don't have a water problem. But we can look at the state of Texas and say, well, we're seeing billions of dollars in losses because we don't have enough water. We have a continuing drought situation, whether it be in agriculture and also inability for housing developments to pop up, mainly in one of the fastest growing areas in the country, which is between San Antonio and Austin in that hill country. So do we have to like start thinking about, it's not a specifically to say it's a water problem, but it is a lack of water in this area, or is it a groundwater problem, a surface water problem? How do we really try to talk about this in a smart way?
It's D, all of the above, right? You're absolutely right. Texas does have a water a problem, but it's not homogeneous across the state, right? Depending on where you are, the water challenges that you face are different. Right. If you're in the panhandle and you are a irrigation based economy that's looking at agricultural product, your primary concern is the depletion of the Ogallala Aquifer. Right. If you are in the Gulf Coast, you might be particularly concerned with subsidence or saltwater intrusion or the lack of inflows to the bays and estuaries. If you are in the Rio Grande Valley, you're concerned about the fact that the Rio Grande is no longer a reliable water source, right? It's no longer a reliable water source for the size of the community. So there's different challenges in different regions or in the hill country, as you pointed out. We have a really fragile ecosystem, karst aquifer system with endangered species and a number of rivers that are literally born right there because of spring flow. So there you've got a challenge of how rapidly peri-urban growth is expanding and overutilizing groundwater resources. But consistent under all of those are a couple of commonalities. And the first is that in large part, the infrastructure that we rely on as Texans, as Americans, was largely subsidized by a wave of federal investments that occurred 50 and 60 years ago, right? So the tap that you turn on, the pipes that you use, were largely subsidized by federal investments and are paid for by the ratepayer, right? That's how we fund water infrastructure. And so the common challenge that we have across the state, regardless of your ecoregion, regardless of the water supply that you are dependent on in that region is that we've got aging and deteriorating infrastructure because there's been a lack of investment in it, and the ability to fund new or repairs for infrastructure has become much more challenging, particularly for rural communities that lack the technical capacity to do so or the financial portfolio to apply for those low interest loans. And so what I think is really happening, perhaps as a market, you know, difference from last session to this one, is last session we focused a lot on this concept of infrastructure as an umbrella concept. What is infrastructure? It's the built infrastructure, it's the ground, you know, it's the aquifers, it's all of these different components. And now we're really focusing in on, but how do you fund the improvements, the expansions that need to occur in order to ensure that there's reliable water across the board?
Well, what is Governor Abbott focusing on?
Well, we have not seen legislation filed. I think Governor Abbott is looking very clearly at the impact, the role that water is going to play in our economic viability as a state. That comes through very clearly in his announcements and his declarations. The plan that he refers to appears to be the plan that Senator Charles Perry has been developing and championing over the course of the past year. We have not seen the legislation yet for that, but what we know is that there is going to be an effort to create a dedicated or continuous funding mechanism for water infrastructure. And so perhaps to zoom out for a moment, again, last legislative session, Senate Bill 28 and Senate Joint Resolution 75 helped create the Texas Water Fund. It was Prop 6, Texas voters approved it with huge margins. And the Texas Water Fund created this umbrella structure from which, and we placed, as you said, a drop in the bucket, initial deposit of $1 billion into that Texas Water Fund. And that gives our state agency, the Texas Water Development Board, which is the agency that does our state water plan and our financing, the ability to distribute funds across existing programs, one of which is the new water supply fund, one of which is the SWIFT, which is what plans all the strategies in our state water plan.
That's the state water infrastructure for Texas.
That's right, exactly. And that one was approved. So that was the last time that Texans voted on a constitutional amendment to invest in water infrastructure was in 2013 when they created that SWIFT fund. That was a $2 billion investment from our Texas Rainy Day Fund. And then it took 10 years before we were talking about a statewide investment again into the Texas Water Fund just this last year of $1 billion. Now, to put all of this in scale, depending on whose numbers you're using, you can pretty much see about $150 billion worth of investment needs in our current infrastructure, right? Just to get it, our current infrastructure and our projected infrastructure needs for the next 50 years. So a $1 billion deposit is not really getting there. So what we're hearing Governor Abbott say is there is a commitment towards the prioritization of water and the creation of a dedicated or continuous injection of $1 billion every year towards that Texas Water Fund.
Senator Perry had been talking about a $5 billion investment in this legislative session. And so do you think this response from Abbott is like, no, bigger?
Oh, that's interesting. Yes, and I think that Senator Perry is hoping that there will be that the state will front load an initial investment into the Texas Water Fund of $5 billion this legislative session. And then there be a constitutional amendment that creates for a dedicated or continuous injection of $1 billion thereafter. So I think that you're right. People are using slightly different numbers. If you look at the Senate and the House budgets, there's $2.5 billion in there, right? So depending on if you're looking at the supplemental or the constitutional amendment, I think that overall the idea is that this legislative session, we can expect to see a larger investment, whether that's 2.5 or 5 or whatever it is, towards the Texas Water Fund. And then thereafter, a constitutional amendment that creates this regular injection of funds. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so everyone agrees this is a problem. Let's throw money at it. Okay, let's just do that. But that's not a solution. And there's a lot of different solutions out there that need to be considered. And some of the solutions are not really solutions. For example, they say build more reservoirs. Well, we've got plenty of reservoirs. The problem is they don't have any water in them.
Yeah. You know, I think Senator Perry would agree with you. And if I were to think back listening to him over the years, I think part of what got him interested in this was looking at our state water plan, some of the regions, and seeing that in some cases, there were proposals to build new reservoirs that may really be politically or financially infeasible, right? Water projects don't happen in the short term. These take years and years and years to develop, and the cost is really high for a lot of these large-scale projects. And so what I hear, his legislation is really going to be responsive to that. But to go back to your question around the different strategies, you know, Texas has had a state water plan since the early 60s. I think it was 1961, right after the drought of the 1950s. And so we, as a state, we've actually been ahead of the curve on a national scale and even an international scale of having a state water plan that's really carefully looking at what our supply and demand projections are and what strategies are going to be needed in order to fill that gap. Now, in the 1960s, that was a top-down plan. In 1997, legislation was passed that inversed it, and now it's a ground-up planning process, meaning it's decentralized. There are 16 different regional water planning groups, and every 5 years, they adopt a new regional water plan, and those get compiled together to be the state water plan. When you look at the strategies that are in there, you're right, they're diverse. They cover everything from the construction of reservoirs to conservation and reuse, investment in that infrastructure. And I think it's really important that we recognize how many people are involved in that process, how many local water experts and constituents are involved. Texas is very proud of the fact that it has a stakeholder-driven water planning process. And so as we have this conversation, you're absolutely right. It highlights, well, what is the water going to, what's that money going to be used for? And then the separate, you know, the separate question is, do we need more money? Yes, everybody agrees that we do need more money. Water needs to be prioritized. And then the question is, how is that money going to be distributed to which projects? And so I bring up the state water plan because there's a very sophisticated process in place already to look at different types of projects, different types of needs, and to have those be strategically allocated based off of local professionals' opinions.
Because we have these regional views of water in Texas, and that's critical because Texas is so different all across the state, but also it kind of makes a system where they're in competition for water and these investments. And we also have an idea like, I don't want our water to go over there. We may not need it now, but we're probably going to need it in the future. So there is a benefit to having a water czar or someone in Texas looking at the big picture.
You know, for as long as we've had a state water plan and for as long as Texas has been a high water risk state, which is always, and we will always be high water risk, right? We have perpetual droughts, we have perpetual floods, we have all of the things in between, and we have very large, expansive geographies. And water and water infrastructure is a function of economies of scale, always, right? So when you're talking about supplying water to an urban municipality, that's one approach. But once you're talking about a collection of rural communities over a large, then the numbers become very different, right? The competition, the idea of how are you shipping water from one place to another, that story, that conversation has existed all through Texas's history. That's not new. And I think that it's going to be very easy for people to get distracted by the fear of how water might be moved from one place to another. I think instead, the opportunity here is to look at one, the fact that we are, in some cases, 8 and 9 times oversubscribed on the funding mechanisms that are available, both at the state level and even some of the federal funds that we receive, right? So we have to address the need for additional funding and accessibility of that funding for infrastructure. And then also can bolster some of the strategic decisions that are happening at that local and in some cases regional scales, because in some cases, as Senator Perry has pointed out, we are going to have to find some regional solutions for those economies of scale, right? You're never going to be able to take a small community with a limited ratepayer base and fund a whole bunch of new expensive water infrastructure. Those numbers just don't play out. In some cases, there will need to be a regional approach. But I think that the conversation about is water getting shipped from one place or to the other, really it comes down to the economics and the fact that water is very heavy and expensive to move as well, right? So you're going to have to find a pretty significant market to make those numbers work.
Well, Israel does it.
That's right. They do.
With their water highway. Bexar County does it. The San Antonio Water System moves a lot of water around from Burleson County. And the Romans did it.
With an aqueduct. Yes. Through all of human history, we have settled where there was water. And then as we grew and our water demands grew, we started bringing more water to us, right? The aqueduct model. I think that there are more and more communities, however, and San Antonio is a great example. Of course, they got a lot of press around the Vista Ridge pipeline, but they also get a lot of press nationally and internationally for the fact that they have heavily diversified their water portfolio and have reuse and aquifer storage and recovery and brackish desalination and everything else in between, right? And so I think more and more you're going to see communities, especially our urban communities that have the funding ability, the ratepayer base to do so, diversifying to the point that they're no longer reliant on just the aqueduct model, right? Now they're looking for efficiencies within the system. Austin has just adopted a reuse policy as well and is looking at a 100-year water plan. If you look at El Paso, they too have a big reliant water portfolio that's looking at local strategies that keeps water within the loop. So I think it's going to be a yes and scenario. In some cases, you're going to have to see pipelines are a mechanism for transferring. That doesn't tell you about what water they're transferring, the strategy that's being used to treat it as well. So there is a lot of talk about brackish desalination, meaning groundwater that isn't fresh groundwater, but kind of has that higher salinity level or TDS, and looking for regional opportunities to treat that and distribute it, probably through a pipeline, to different communities on a regional scale.
I look at the town of Corpus Christi and their water situation. They're in stage three water restrictions right now because their surface water supply, these couple of lakes that they use, are very, very low. They are moving towards, they just licensed the Inner Harbor Ocean Desal Project, which has a lot of controversies involved. I don't want to get into all that. But they're looking at this massive ocean desalinization. But also there's a problem that this was created because the city made a lot of promises to industry moving into the area, refineries. That's taking a lot of their municipal water supplies. And they're asking the residential ratepayers to essentially pay for it. Those are my concerns.
I mean, I think those are important concerns and important opportunities, like I said, where there are businesses that want to move to Texas. I think there's opportunities for them to also be participant in some of these huge funding needs. And you're right, it's complicated. And to me, what it draws out is, more than anything, we are at a really important inflection point in Texas and in the nation, I would say, around how we fund infrastructure and what that means in terms of, one, the ability to fund resilient and secure infrastructure, and two, what that means from an affordability standpoint, right? So in Texas, we have this very clear dichotomy between areas of extraordinary growth, right, in terms of people and industries, and also areas of the state that are experiencing the opposite, a loss of population. And in both cases, all across Texas, we're seeing aging and deteriorating infrastructure. We're seeing less and less reliable water supply. And we're seeing a growing gap in what they're going to need for the future. How we fund infrastructure on the backs of the ratepayers is going to make it so that the options become more limited based off of the size of your community, the affordability indexes, and our state agencies. And Texas Water Development Board, as a small but mighty state agency, provides the bulk of our water infrastructure financing, have been working really hard to address the fact that many communities are having a hard time accessing the water infrastructure funding that they need, right? And so when you use Corpus Christi as an example, to me, what it signals is really the challenge of that conversation around what is the best way for us to fund water infrastructure to ensure long-term stability without impacting your short-term affordability, right? And is it really correct? And so when I say that, then it brings up, well, is there an opportunity for some private investment into that infrastructure to help subsidize? I don't know. I'm saying that as a hypothetical, right? But is it fair for the ratepayer to be really burdened with the full cost of that? Is there a role for the state to help subsidize by front loading some of that investment? Is there an opportunity for private partnerships or investment to help subsidize that, particularly if their industries are benefiting from the expansion of that infrastructure? I think that those are really important conversations that are happening right now under the surface, so to speak.
Do you think Texas voters who show up during these constitutional amendment elections, you think they will support a robust solution, a multi-billion dollar solution to deal with Texas water?
I do. Yeah. Every poll up until now has signaled that Texans see water as being a priority. So I would feel very optimistic about a constitutional amendment being brought to the Texas voters. Now, I will say that I think there is a lot of room for increased awareness around what that means once the rubber hits the road in your local community and you're talking about what it means from a funding mechanisms, that's where I think there's a little bit more concern or need for increased conversation. But as a state, Texans tend to show up for water. And one of the ways that we can see this very clearly is in the establishment of the Texas Water Caucus at the legislature, which just voted to become bicameral last week, where we have 74 members and counting. And what that tells us is that more and more legislators, and in part because of the concerns of their constituents, are showing up and wanting to say, I need to learn about water. I want to know about water, right? So that tells us that one, there's a growing challenge and issue, and two, that there's a growing prioritization. And that ladders all the way up to leadership and the governor's declaration, right? And so I think that this is all a good signal that people are paying attention, and really for the first time in 30 years. That's the other thing to know is, we've been talking about dedicated funding for water since 1997, and there's never been a political opening for it until now. So that's the scale of how significant this moment is.
Sarah Schlesinger is the CEO of the Texas Water Foundation, a statewide nonpartisan nonprofit that works in water policy and a statewide water campaign called Texas Runs on Water. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. We have past episodes of Texas Matters available on our website at tpr.org. And you can find us wherever you download cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.